Harihi Om Sahanavavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvinavatitamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 4 Adhikarna 1. The fullness of Bhagavan. Okay. So then, Vriti, having proved that Bhagavan is the most blissful form of the absolute truth, next it is
Okay.
shown. Sorry?
Which page, sorry?
22, 22.
Sorry.
Yes, got it? Okay. So on the vritti, top of the page. Having proved that Bhagavan is the most blissful form of the absolute truth, next it is shown that Bhagavan is the fulfiller of all purusharthas. So you want it, why do you want to show that Bhagavan is the most blissful form? Because there are those that'll think that the impersonal will be the most blissful form. As we saw before, is that there's the ideas that forms and all that give us trouble. Any kind of endeavor and all that gives us trouble. Therefore, any relationships, all that give us trouble. So then the topmost happiness will come from not dealing with any forms. So they have the idea that therefore the Brahman feature of the Lord will give the highest happiness. But that's then what's shown by the, you know, in the example of the Kumaras and Sukadeva Goswami, that it's the form of the Lord that gives the greatest happiness. And so because of that, then we see then they are properly engaged. And so the taste that they get from the form of the Lord is much greater than they're getting from the Brahman platform. And so that aspect then they're appreciating.
Maharaj,
Yes.
so it seems that actually it's always a competition between Vaishnava and Mayavadi.
Basically, yeah, it's always it's just the way it is, because those who think the impersonal see is why is because, in other words, it's a competition between spiritual and material,
Yes.
right? We'll call them transcendentalists because that's what they're endeavoring for, but it's not necessarily, you know, like you call the guy that on the corner that, you know, has that little dinky shop, you know, that's about 1 meter by 1 meter by 1 meter, you know, and he sells, let's say, cold drinks or pan or something like that. So you will call him a businessman, you know, but at the same time as it's, you know, there's a little bit something lacking. Yes. So the Mayavadis, impersonalists will be transcendentalists because they're trying for the transcendent. They're trying to rise above the material world, but they don't
Yes.
actually understand that the highest transcendental is the personal.
Yes.
So because they stop at the at the impersonal, they consider that the highest, because everybody's going to go for the highest. And so in that endeavor, they don't see the personal. They just see that that's an expansion of the impersonal. You know, one is they'll say, oh, the impersonal is all illusion. But then if you can prove, no, it's real, you know, by the verses that say his form is transcendental, then they'll say, well, that's because it's just expanding from the impersonal. So it's the happiness of the impersonal that you're gaining in that personal form. And so therefore it's still, you know, like that. It's just Brahman. But then the Acharya points out is that, but if that's the case, then in straight Brahman, then they are having a particular taste. Why is it when that Brahman is then now it has, you know, has a form that it gives greater happiness? So that means it's the form that's generating, because otherwise Brahman's Brahman. You're getting one taste. Then when it's embodied, you know, in their concept as Ishwara, then it should be the same taste, but it's greater. That's what the Shastra is saying. So their argument that, oh no, it just comes from, because it's connected with Brahman, doesn't actually, it's not a good argument, because then you get the same taste from the other. And then if it's no, but when it's embodied, then you get more taste, and that's the point. The form gives more taste. So that, and so that means if it gives taste, that must mean it's spiritual. It's transcendental.
Yes.
Right? You know, so that's the thing, because then if it's, oh, no, but it's still just the mode of goodness. So that means anything in mode of goodness would give a taste to Brahman. So just, you know, getting up in the morning, taking your bath, putting on your tilak, the difficulty comes down is they're always, because of mundane consciousness, then they want to maintain them that they're the controller and enjoyer. While devotion indicates that we're the servant, and they really just don't like that. I mean, like literally, they don't like that. They want to be God. That's part of their whole process. So we're always going to see this, a constant. So that's why you see anytime it comes up, there's that regular aspect of always mentioning about the impersonal. Anytime a doubt can come up about the impersonal, it's dealt with. Yes. Because by nature, we're going to take either karma or jnana. These are going to be our distractions. So then in this distraction and karma or jnana, then... how you say the karma, it's more obvious that it's not spiritual, and the gyan, though, because it's dealing with the spiritual, it's taken as it's on that transcendental platform, but it's not free. You haven't given up the linga sharir, so you still have that idea, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Mm-hmm. Though you may take it back to, you know, a more basic kind of understanding, but you're still attached to that. So then, you know, because they say, I'm God and Brahmananda, they'll taste the ananda of Brahman. So they still want to be the controller and enjoyer. So it becomes more dangerous, because it's, in one sense, close, because it has that element of the spiritual. But in another sense, it's farther away, because we're not accepting the personal. So therefore, the karma, in one sense, is closer, because they accept the personal. But unfortunately, they don't accept the spiritual. But in of the two, the karmi, the activities they perform and kind of those kind of actions will remain basically the same. They'll be purified, but they'll remain the same. But, you know, you're still eating and interacting and doing, you know, working and doing all that. So those aspects remain. So it's easier in one sense for the karmi to appreciate the transcend, the personal form. That you're restricting the senses, you're endeavoring for something spiritual, that you have rituals, you have a teacher, you have your scriptures and all that, then the jnanis and the yogis, they'll be comfortable with that, right? But the idea that the Supreme is a person and therefore you have to serve and all that, then that's where it breaks down. Mm-hmm. So someone might appreciate all the philosophy and the technical and the jnana, and the austerity and all that, but when it comes to that personal kind of thing, they don't catch it. So they may be reluctant to do activities. They think just sitting around chanting, reading, and that's it, that's enough. And so they don't see that performing specific duties for Krishna is an advantage. So they'll have that attachment. So that's where they'll be weak. Well, the other ones then, they're agreeable to do activities, but they may not see it in the context of spiritual.
Yes.
So devotional life is new to us in the way of just in the recent consciousness is new. I mean, anciently it goes back. It is. It's the natural position. But in recent times, we haven't seen, we've only seen karma or jnana. That's all we've ever seen. So we can relate to one or the other. But bhakti means the two of them are functioning together simultaneously. So even though in the material platform, they're opposed to each other, right? If karma, I'm performing the activities, I'm getting the results, they're mine. Jnana, I don't want results, therefore I don't perform any activities, therefore I'm not entangled. But bhakti means I perform the activity, of engaging the senses without attachment to the results because it's for Krishna. So you have the renunciation, but you have the activity.
Yes.
You have the results, but you don't have that it's for you. So this opposes whatever we've ever thought before. Right? It's that's why it's so difficult. That's because otherwise it's pretty straightforward. You explain it once, it's done. But, for the last, 30, 40, 50 years, we have to keep hearing it over and over and over again because it's kind of like, it's a no, but, there's always that little bit because it's just, but, hey, when I was an aardvark, then what about, this one and that, is different. And no, then like this. And so you have to, from every angle, try to convince us. So that's the difficulty is that, but at the same time as the more we go into it, the more depth there is, the more it has that personal, the more is the relationship with Krishna. And so that it's not that we're just hearing the same thing over and over until we've heard that we can't move forward. That's the beauty of bhakti is that you are advancing even if you don't fully understand it. Or not fully practicing it or this or that, there's some weaknesses there. Because it's connected to Krishna, you are moving forward. So then as you realize, it's more deep, it's more meaningful. Though at the beginning, it's also very meaningful, but it's just that, it's just like a drop and then as it increases. So that's why it's ever fresh, ever new. So you can read something today and then read it again and read it again, and there'll be more and more things that you can see from it.
Yes.
So that's here. So from every angle, it has to be. Also, it's not that all the discussions that are going on here in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, that one person has all these doubts. But the point is these are all the doubts you can have. But, one person might have one or two or three like that, and someone else a different ones, and someone else five, or this or that. They're all, overlapping. But in total, let's say there's 10 doubts. Generally, you'll never see any one person with all 10 doubts. Right? They just never thought that far. They don't have that much, like that, which is good. Better only a few than the whole bunch. But we see like with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, whatever doubt is there, he's presenting it. It says Lord Chaitanya gave hundreds of examples to defeat the impersonal philosophy. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he then gives, retorts with also hundreds and hundreds of thousands and thousands of arguments. So in other words, whatever argument there was there in the Mayavad philosophy and from whatever angle of Gyan that could be, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was speaking it. And whatever angle was there, Lord Chaitanya was defeating it. So you have that very nice dynamic. But in general, it's all kind of the same thing, They all kind of have that same little bit. It's like political correctness. It's the same words, the same reactions. The same, nothing new, no philosophy like that. So the point is that we've dealt with it all angles, so that all these things are dealt with. So then we're comfortable. But at the same time, we also have the aspect is that it can remove any doubts that we may have. Because any of those, let's say 10 doubts, which ones we have, then they're dealt with.
Yes.
So it looked like that. It's perfect. Is that okay?
Maharaj, sometimes, in the beginning when you think about Mayavadi, it's far away in India, like that.
Yes, yes.
And after, when we study that, we can see that doubts are inside ourselves,
Yes, yes, so yes. That's the whole point.
Yes.
You have that point that in Satyuga, the devotees and demons, the suras and asuras, were on different planetary systems.
Yes.
In the Treta Yuga, they were on different continents. In Dwapara Yuga, they were in different families. And in Kali Yuga, they're in the same body.
Yes.
So, yes. So then all these things are dealt with. Now, the thing is this, as we hear this, we contemplate it, we find the weaknesses that we may have, then in you know, thinking about the philosophy, how to adjust it, and when we're convinced, then that makes it just so much more powerful in convincing others, because we've gone through the steps.
Yes.
That we convinced ourselves.
Yes.
And so then when others then may have a doubt, then we can deal with that.
Yes.
Because we you know, we've just dealt with that. And then by dealing with them, then you get that experience on how to clear those doubts.
Yes.
So that's another reason this manana is so important, because you're always contemplating so that you're always aware of the practical application. So if you're contemplating, you can get others to contemplate.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, this works only when the intent is the same, to become Krishna conscious.
Yes.
If there is a deviation of that intent, it's more or less, it's always a problem.
It's always a problem, but for much of the time, people aren't even aware of their weaknesses.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let's say, for example, someone's doing an activity and you can see what's wrong with the activity. It's very obvious to you.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who's doing it can't see it. And even you try to point it out, then they may, you know, argue for some time and all this and that. They may accept, they may not. But everybody else standing around, it's obvious.
Yes.
Right? Now, you know, let's say half an hour later, it's a different person in that group is now doing something wrong. And everybody else, including the first one that they were, now they all can see. So because when there's no attachment, it's really easy to see.
Yes.
But when there's attachment, it's very hard to see. So that you'll get that aspect is that the individual, they're doing something and whatever's their values and all that, the conditions, so they don't necessarily notice its improper application.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, let's say someone comes to Krishna consciousness, I mean, is attracted by Krishna consciousness because they see devotees are nice, the philosophy is nice, they're talking about being nice, you know, good qualities and that, and caring and all this. So you're attracted because out in the material world, most of the places, people don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you come in, you start chanting, you do all those things. But, you know, what attracts you is just the niceness of devotees, the culture, the character, you know, like that. But one can make the mistake to think it's the culture and character that makes Krishna consciousness. No, it's connection to Krishna. Krishna's culture. Krishna has character. The devotees have character. Like that. That's just the nature of it. But it's not that. That's the prerequisite. But with time, you might forget that. And then just be focused on doing that. And then you make that mistake. Your attachment is that, that, you know, niceness, the kind of character and that, but it's generic. It's not based on Shastra. You know, it's not, you know, necessarily a specific individual element. It's just something that you have an appreciation for, an attraction for. So you'll work in those areas, you know, you'll preach in areas where people are like that or appreciate that, and you'll get good results. You know, like, let's say you go to the yoga studio and you talk all these nice positions and all that, and that people are attracted, right? But then other scenarios you may not be able to relate to, you know, and all that, and you can't understand, like you can't understand, appreciate, let's say, the devotee's managing, you know, because he has to make these hard decisions and this and that, and, you know, all these kind of things. So therefore, this person, you know, he did something wrong, but, you know, talking to me, he felt bad. So therefore he was, why is the president so strict with him? You know, like that. And then let's say there's, you know, but I see the good character. So I'm not actually understanding what's right and wrong. For me, right and wrong means nice or not nice. right? Then there's another devotee, you know, let's say that's done something a little bit not quite as bad. So the president's not quite as strong with them. But in my dealings with that individual, he wasn't so nice. You know, he wasn't a pleasant person. So I don't really appreciate him. So then I'll be saying, you know, what is this? This is unjust. You know, someone, here's this nice person you're so strong with, and here's this not so nice person and you're being lenient with, and all this, and what's going on here? You understand?
Yes.
And because we take it that that's Krishna, one, we can only see with that vision, and two, because of the idea of what we are, what we value, then we're going to see. Does that make sense? And so then, like that, and then we get caught up in that. So if we've been doing that for the last so many years, then we might get distracted. And that will be the basis of our judging things rather than its connection to Krishna or not. So that's why we see, you know, instructions by Narad Muni that he's pointing out is that even these, you know, big demons like Kamsa and Ravana and others, they got so much benefit because they had these bad qualities were directed towards the Lord. And so the connection to the Lord is what is value. The bad qualities aren't a value. But what's that? How can you be bad and advance in devotional service? You know? And if somebody's nice, then, oh yeah, then everything has to be nice. Yes. But we find a person's nice, let's say socially they're nice, but let's say personally in their own life, they're not so great. You know, maybe a really nice person, but their personal habits aren't very hygienic or something, or, you know, or they eat weird food, or, you know, it's something, you know. But we'll take it. If they're nice, everything's good. And if there's something wrong, everything's bad. Same way with the manager. He'll look at it, what's efficient for management. That's what's good. And so he's getting things done for Krishna and he sees like that. But then sometimes because he sees the efficiency is the main, he may miss the point that it's not just the efficiency, it's efficiency in devotional service, in being connected with Krishna. So then he might do things that disturb the devotees, which may not be necessary. It's not that there's a standard you're following and they're disturbed because they're not up to the standard or don't appreciate the standard. That's a different thing. What can you do? You know, you can try to educate and train, but everyone's an individual. They have to themselves accept. But at the same time, as he might just see the efficiency, and so he just does things that disturbs everybody, and he can't see what the fault is, though everybody else can see. Right? He sees that there's no fault. Then some will see, oh, you're not acting nicely, so that's a fault. Others will see this not acting nicely is coming from not being Krishna conscious. So not being Krishna conscious is the real fault.
Yes.
Right? Just like the person who's acting badly, it's not that the acting badly is the main thing. It's that they're not Krishna conscious. That's why they're acting badly.
Yes.
Right? So one has to be able to take that step and go all the way forward, because otherwise on the lower platform, there's always going to be disagreement. Because the details are different, what modes you're attached to are different, what values within that mode are different, you know, the particular combinations and permutations are different. So there's always going to be within material, there's always going to be argument. So that means if you're connecting material to the spiritual, there's going to still be argument. Because material means argument.
Yes.
Right? And Kali Yuga, that's enhanced. You know? You get the premium rate of argument here, you know, like that. The other ages, you get, you know, it's not as, the quality is not as good. But in Kali Yuga, then, you know, it's very freely available. Everybody can take advantage, you know, like that. And so that's the point. So they are going to argue. It's just because that's the way material is. Because whatever your value is, that's the best. Anybody else's, if it's supportive of yours, in line with or supportive, it's all right, you know, or there's an angle of it they can relate to, but otherwise, no, it's a fight. Right? If it's against something, if there are those who are totally against you, then anybody who has any elements that are supportive of what you do, those are allies.
Yes.
But as soon as that enemy is gone, that common enemy, now everybody else is your enemy because they don't agree with you. So that's the difficulty. It's always going to be that. So therefore, anybody with any material consciousness, karma or jnana, is going to be fighting with the actual transcendental platform.
Yes.
Like that. Yes. So that's the principle that will always be there. And we see that going back into the Daksha Yajna. It comes down to, the Shaivites against the Vaishnavs. Mm-hmm. Generally, those who are impersonalists, they tend to worship Shiva.
Yes.
You know, because he's renounced in that. He gives, all the blessings. And when they're in the liberated state, he deals with them. He's the boss.
Yes.
But he's not the one that awards liberation. That's Krishna. Krishna's Mukunda, not Shiva. But once they're in that liberated state, then Shiva manages them. As long as they're absorbed in their aham brahmasmi, they're fine. But as soon as they start to think of material desires and activities, then he arranges to put them back into the material energy. So these things are always going on. It's always a place of duality. So it's not variety. It means variety is there, but it's more, the emphasis is the duality. So within your context, you see the variety, but any variety other than yours, then it's opposing. Then it's duality. In the spiritual world, hot, cold, it doesn't matter. It's all connected to Krishna. When it's hot, then you get out your chamaras, you get out, wear fine clothes, you have the fans, you have, fine drinks and eat, the summer fruits and all these kind of things like that. When it's the winter, then you wear, more heavy clothes, you wear the chudders, you make fires, you eat, things that are nice and warm. And so for that, all it is it's variety in serving Krishna. That's all. It's not that one's good, one's bad. They're both, if they're connected to Krishna, they're both good. If they're not connected to Krishna, they're both bad. So that kind of consciousness is what's necessary. So that's the aspect, what faith is. So that there's some faith that Krishna consciousness is better than the material world. Then that starts the process of Shraddha. And then as you go step by step, it's supposed to go more. But by Nishta, then there should be a very strong kind of conviction that only by devotional service is there any real benefit. And in fact, devotional service contains all the benefits that are there within all other processes. That then situational anishta, that there's a little bit of faith in this, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, that will start the process. But for the Madhyama, then they have to be fixed in that, right? Does that make sense? And then prema means it's complete. It's only about Krishna. There's no need of anything else. Like we were reading from Nectar Devotion that, in the Vatsalya Rasa and there, that examples of prema. Because prema, one of the quality of prema is that there is no obstacle. You always are absorbed in the Lord. Isn't that it, Haladhar?
Yes, Maharaj. Yes, Maharaj.
Yes, okay. So the example is given is Mother Yashoda, if she was standing in the middle of a fire of chaff, to her that would, and seeing Krishna, it would seem like it was some nice cooling, a situation. But if she's in the nicest situation, but no, she can't see Krishna, then for her, she's burning in the fire of separation. So the point is it doesn't matter what's there. They only see, they're only absorbed in Krishna. Just like it said, they meet the Maturavasis or Dwarkavasis, and they come in, offer respects to Krishna, do all those things, talk about how great Krishna is and how he's the Supreme Lord and this and that. Mother Yashoda doesn't hear any of that. She just sees Krishna there and she's happy. And as soon as they're done talking about his godship, she goes over and puts him on his her lap. You know, so that's prema. You just, no obstacle. Nothing will distract your rati. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the position where there's no more difficulty.
Yes.
All these distractions and this and that and these opposites and that. Everything's reconciled in Krishna. So there may be opposites, it's seeming opposites, but it's all Krishna. And it's just like you have your right hand and your left hand. They seem they're opposite, but they're all Krishna. Or more extreme, you have your hand and your leg, but it's all Krishna. It's all the one body. Or your head and your toes, but it's still all one body. So there's no contradiction. You can say, how can those be together at once? But they're all there at once. How is it that you have, you know, the front, the back, you know? So there should be two fronts, you know, on both sides. So you could walk either way, you know. So you could walk forward, go where you're going, and backwards you'd be talking to the guy behind you, you know, like that, and have a nice conversation and get everywhere you're going, you know. Yeah, but that's weird. You know. Okay, we're good?
Yes, nice. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Anucheda 87. The Lord is described as the form of unlimited purusharthas. Right? Because the purusharta means that we perform a work to get a result. And so he is the form of unlimited purusharta. Whatever there is to gain, he is that. There is nothing other than him. So he's the unlimited purusharta. In other words, prema is the unlimited, is the main. We see that you do not have any use for our elaborate worship, O Lord. You directly have a form composed of unlimited human goals. The highest bliss, a form which continues without break at all times, should satisfy us who have desires for benediction. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:3-8. Rudriti, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami says that if one offered various foods but has no appetite, or if one is offered various foods but has no appetite, the offering has no value. In a big sacrificial ceremony, there may be many things accumulated to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if there's no devotion, attachment, or love for the Lord, the arrangement is useless. Right, so no devotion means all of these together, you know, can be all one thing, but we can start with just devotion, even though we don't have the attachment of love, but we have that, we're devoted to try to serve the Lord. Then with time, that devotion develops into attachment. So there's devotion and attachment. Then by functioning on that platform, then it'll gradually come to the point of love for Krishna.
Yes.
So you have that love means you're attached and is with devotion. The Lord is complete in himself and does not need anything from us. However, if we offer him a little water, a flower, and a tulsi leaf, he will accept them. Bhakti, devotional service, is the main way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not a question of arranging huge sacrifices. The priests were regretful, thinking that they were not on the path of devotional service and that their sacrifice was not pleasing to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:3-7 purport. The commentary says, quote, you are the form of unlimited purusharthas, the highest bliss, existing directly, anjasa, at all times, anu shasvanam, naturally, atmanaha. Shruti says, sarva kama, sarva gandha, sarva rasaha. The Lord is all desires, all fragrance, and all taste. The priest spoke thus to the Lord of sacrifice. Right? So whatever desire is there, the fulfillment of that is found in the Lord. So it's not that, okay, yeah, that's nice for, you know, the spiritual stuff, but, you know, the practical stuff, we have to be here. But no, it's that Krishna is the source of that. Whatever is there, it's coming from Krishna. So the potency of it comes from the existence comes from Krishna. Uniqueness of its you know form and everything is coming from Krishna. The action that it can perform and therefore the results it can get are from Krishna, and that purpose of why you use it. And then there's the experience that's coming from Krishna, that taste, all that's coming from Krishna. So there's nothing that's not. So there's no question that any value can be fulfilled on its own without Krishna, because dead matter is not going to satisfy you. Otherwise, you know, then the dead matter in your house would be satisfying each other. You know, the furniture would be making the curtains happy, which would be making the TV happy, which would be making the, you know, the doormat happy, and, you know, and vice versa and all that. And they're all making each other. No, they couldn't care less. Right? Like you get tired of the curtains and you get rid of them. You don't find that now the couch is, you know, lamenting and stuff like that. Or no, not at all. Dead matter couldn't care less. So that's the point, is because there's life there. So the dead matter doesn't care. We care because we're attached to it. But what we're perceiving in the dead matter, that's Krishna. Yeah? Okay. So that is, he's the form of unlimited purusharthas. Riti, in the next Anucheda, it is proven that Bhagavan is the complete manifestation of the absolute, whereas Brahman is incomplete, and bhakti is the cause of seeing the complete Lord. By referring to the excerpt of Narad Muni's instructions to Vyasadeva in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Anucheda 88, that Bhagavan manifestation is complete compared to Brahman was shown previously by the words and experience of the wise. That will be considered now in detail. One entity is called by two names. This does not indicate two different entities. But because one sees difference in manifestation between impersonal and personal forms, it is not just difference in names. There must be two different qualified persons who see these two different forms. Depending on difference of qualification for each realization and two different realizations, one should not think that one vision is real and the other is false, since that is revealed in both is real. That Nagas, yeah, both is real. Nor should one think that there's a difference in one object displaying parts, the supreme entity transforming into parts by some Shakti, since neither Bhagavan nor Brahman can be transformed. Right, so it's through the Shakti. So that's the Shakti Parinamavan is the only way you have transformation. So everything that we see and all the variety, that's the transformation of Shakti. And I even have a, sorry. Yes.
It's written here, there must be two different qualified persons who see these two different forms.
Means one person is qualified, he's seeing Brahman. The other is qualified, he's seeing Bhagavan. So it's does that make sense? As the Supreme. Like that. It's not that, because one person may perceive the various aspects, but they'll see it in the context of one. Like we see Brahman and Paramatma in the context of Bhagavan. But we saw in the previous discussion that there are those who see Bhagavan in the context of Brahman. So Brahman and Paramatma, Bhagavan and Paramatma are just features of Brahman. Does that make sense? Like that. And you also have the seer and the seen. So the Lord is seeing, and we're also seeing, but he's the great seer and we're the small seer. He sees everything and we just see what, you know, we can relate to. Does that work? Yeah. Thus, because there is incomplete and complete vision of one object, without seeking out the completeness of the object, one person realizes a manifestation partially as Brahman, and another person realizes the object completely as Bhagavan. Thus, one vision is incomplete, manifesting the object without particulars. That is Brahman. that vision is complete when there is a form with various qualities arising from the Swarup. That is Bhagavan. Thus, according to the difference in visual power of the person, there is difference in the Lord's manifestation. Footnote 2. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborates in this regard as follows. Lahiri Mahashai spoke in an awed voice. Is there any truth higher than Brahman? If the Supreme Godhead is the cause of Brahman, why do the empirical philosophers not disregard their search for the Brahman and take up devotional service to Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead? Vaishnav Das Babaji laughed shortly and replied, I think it's, you only need the first B. Be they either Lord Brahma, the four Kumaras, Sukadev Goswami, Sri Nard Muni, or Lord Shiva. All these spiritual aspirants have ultimately sought the supreme sanctuary of the lotus feet of Sri Hari, the supreme personality of Godhead. Trying to fathom the subject more deeply, Lahiri Mahashaya asked, if Bhagavan is endowed with a form, this presupposes that spatial limitations. How then could Bhagavan be the source and superior to the unlimited, all-pervasive Brahman? Right? Because they're taking it that, okay, you have unlimited, and if you have a form, then that's, they're seeing it by the space thing. So therefore, it is limited. So how can unlimited come from something that's limited? That's their what they can't understand. Babaji Maharaj replied, even one of the mundane ingredients of this material creation, like Aksha, Akash, space, is practically unlimited. Is then the unlimited Akash superior to Bhagavan? Actually, Sri Bhagavan is also limitless by virtue as infinite potency, one aspect of which is the Brahman, which is manifested as his bodily luster and is infinite and omnipresent. However, simultaneously, Bhagavan accepts a definite form. Have you ever experienced any entity of parallel potency? Right? So that's the whole point, is that no one's like this. That's why he's God. He's different. We try to always judge by our position. Now, it's natural we're going to look at things from our position, because it's ourself that has to understand. You know, we're the one trying to understand. So we have to see it in the context of our experience. But the point is Krishna, he has no problem. He is unlimited and he has a form. And that's all expanding from that form. In other words, it's the form is the cause of the unlimited. So only Bhagavan has such a position. So that's very unique, very special. By this unparalleled, unsurpassable nature, Bhagavan is superior to the Brahman concept. Bhagavan personifies a wonderful, all-attractive personal quality, which is complemented by his omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence. Right? So you have all wonderful, all-attractive personal quality. And then you're going to have the omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence. So you're going to have the one, that wonderful, attractive, personal, and on the other side, you're going to have the impersonal aspect. It's complemented because they go together. Bhagavan manifests boundless compassion and is the source of paramount bliss to the absolute degree. There, furthermore, is not such a clearly defined personal identity ideal. Would you prefer an entity that possesses neither characteristics nor potencies and simply has an impersonal, omnipresent existence? In truth, the Brahman is the impersonal manifestation of Bhagavan. Both the personal and impersonal aspects of Bhagavan exist harmoniously and simultaneously. Brahman is but a fractional manifestation of Bhagavan. But philosophically, myopic persons who are overwhelmed by this formless, tasteless, impersonal, inscrutable, endless aspect of the absolute truth, right? Farsighted persons demand the full vista and are not satisfied with anything less than the complete whole, the entirety of the absolute truth. Right? So then there are those who don't see things very far. They only have their limited vision. And because of that, then they can only see the impersonal. Then there's those who want to see everything. The Vaishnavas are not impressed by this impersonal aspect, this impersonal concept, because it is contrary to the eternal theistic principle and to the edicts of prema. Bhagavan Sri Krishna is the source and shelter of both the personal and impersonal aspects, concepts. He is the shoreless ocean of sublime joy, drawing close to himself all pure souls. Jiva Dharma, chapter 4. Okay. So continuing from before, six verses describe this difference in the conversation of Narada and Vyas. You have also investigated and realized, I would tend on this layout to put this six verses and all that, that sentence on the next page.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I understand.
You have also investigated and realized the Brahman, which is eternal. Then why should you lament that you have been unsuccessful? Srimad Bhagavatam 154, right? So he's gotten into all these different things and has applied himself to investigating Brahman and having that realization. Then he's saying, why are you lamenting? Why do you think you're unsuccessful, right? Because if you're looking at Brahman as supreme and you've come up, understood that, why are you lamenting? Right? You wander like the sun throughout the three worlds, seeing everything, and wander like the life air throughout the body as the witness of everyone's intelligence. Though I have become fixed in the Brahman by proper method and fixed in the Vedas by regulated study, but this is not enough. Please tell me what is lacking. Right. So he's turning to Narada Muni because he's become fixed in Brahman by the proper method, and he's fixed in the Vedas by regular study. So everything is, you know, seemingly perfect because that's what it would appear that what you're trying to do. But unfortunately, then what's happening is that they're not appreciating this aspect that there's something beyond this. These are just religion, right? And so in that religion, these are just religious processes, but what's the goal? What's the ultimate goal of what's the eternal religion? That's not being seen. So he's saying that Narada Muni, because he can move anywhere in the three worlds and see everything, and it's just like the life air and the body and all that, he can see the intelligence, he can see everything. So being that he, you know, already has the benefits of all what he's trying to gain in this, then he can see what's lacking. He can tell him what's wrong. Narada said, "You have not sufficiently described the glories of the spotless Lord Krishna. The Lord is not satisfied with jnan. I think that this jnan is insufficient." Srimad Bhagavatam 158. Right, so you have the knowledge, but knowledge we see is that's the, what do we do? If we have knowledge, let's say like you go to school, you get knowledge, but if you don't use it, will we consider that that's perfect? The guy went to school, he studied, he got his PhD, and he does nothing. Will we consider that that's success? No, you have to apply it. And in that application, there's some ultimate goal. Right? So we've established Krishna is the source of all, he is the culmination of all purusharthas. Right? So therefore that goal to gain, it has to be in connection with Krishna. So knowledge is not enough. You have to use it. So that's why the Jnana Shakti is serving the Kriya Shakti, which is serving the Icha Shakti.
Maharaj, just a side question about the Purusharta. I think there are four Purusharta connected to material life and one with the spiritual life. So actually, it's can we say that in the case of Yassadev, he was missing the point to connect to Bhagavan aspect in that?
Yes, aspect? Yes, yes, you can say that. Because you see in Mahabharata, I mean, he's just compiled all the Vedic literature, and that's all Apara Vidya. And he's compiled Mahabharata as the conclusion.
Yes.
But the problem is in that conclusion, he's only establishing the religious principles. He mentions about Krishna, but and that he's the Supreme Lord and that the devotees are there and respecting him. And so, but he hasn't brought it out that it's about devotional service and pure devotional service. So he's only emphasized the religious aspect. And then the difficulty comes up is that having dealt with that religious aspect, then people will take it only that far. They don't take it up to the ultimate religious aspect of that surrender to Krishna. That they miss out on. So that's the weakness here. Is he's only brought out that aspect, nothing else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's just knowledge. It's just knowledge for people. Even the stage of jnana without the bondage of karma is not glorious, right? Because there'll be knowledge, but you're still bound by karma. But then he's saying, beyond that is where you have the knowledge, you're not bound by karma, you're liberated. He's saying even that is not glorious if it is devoid of bhakti to the Supreme Lord. What is the use of having destroyed ignorance? What then to speak of sakam karma, which causes suffering, both during practice and at the stage of perfection, and nishkam karma when not offered to the Lord? So therefore, if liberation doesn't gain you anything, it's not gaining. So let alone material activities. So therefore, even you're performing nishkam karma yoga, if it's not connected to the Lord, there'll be no satisfaction. Because otherwise, we see the impersonalists talk about nishkam karma yoga. It's a major part of their process. Because to get out of the material entanglement, you have to work without attachment. By performing a work out of duty, you're getting liberated in that aspect. That's just the way it works. But we're doing it to please Krishna. So liberation is coming. It means you're doing that to please Krishna. So it's bhakti. And on the side, you're getting liberation. So our motive is to please Krishna. So the sakam nishkam karma yoga, it means it's not about pleasing us. It's about pleasing Krishna. And so therefore, everything's perfect. Right? And at the same time is then you're freed from material entanglement. Just like in, so therefore then you can even perform, and that means you can be performing activities that wouldn't necessarily be practiced just in the path of jnana, but also in the path of karma, is that all your activities, your daily activities and all these things, the varnashram activities are all being done without attachment to please the Lord. Right? So that's then the idea is that its connection to the Lord is what makes it perfect. That's what makes it ideal, not something else. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. I offer respects to you, Bhagavan, Krishna. Let us respect Vasudeva, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarsana in our minds. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.37. Using this mantra, indicating the four forms, one worships the deity who is the subject of the dhyana mantra, the Lord worthy of worship. That person directly sees the form of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.38. Though these particular verses are mixed with others, these are not in contiguous sequence. They have been collaborated in abbreviated form so the meaning can be perceived, so that the work does not become large, right? So even though he's not giving all of them, he's taking the essential points that are there because there'll be explanations in between and some examples and like that. So just the main points are given in an order so that we can understand them. Right? Like that. The meaning will be explained, right? So he says, otherwise the work will become large, right? And the sandarbhas are already a large work in themselves. So you can imagine if he wanted to get into detail how big it would be, right? Basically the full Oxford dictionary of, you know, 16, you know, massive volumes would be embarrassed because the sandarbha would be, you know, so big. And that's just keeping it concise, because if you want to know more, then you go to Ananta Sesh. 1,000 mouths talking constantly, since eternity. That's, then you could say, now we're getting down to the fine detail. So this is enough for us, right? Like that. The meaning will be explained, starting with the Srimad Bhagavatam 154. The commentary says, I think you can take out the here. The commentary says, that eternal supreme Brahman has been investigated, jigyasitam, by you, and understood and attained, adhitam, by you. Then why do you lament? 157. You wander in the three worlds like the sun. By a portion of power of Vaishnava yoga, you are like the prana within all beings. The witness of all beings is the knower of internal and external bodily functions. I am fixed in the supreme Brahman by yoga, pare brahmani dharmataha, and fixed in the Vedas, avare brahmani, by regulated studies. Vratahi, Yajnavalkya says, ijachara jaya himsa, dhana swaya swadhyaya karmanam ayam paramo labho yad yogenatma darshanam. One gains the highest benefit from worship, good conduct, compassion, non-violence, charity, and study of the Vedas. By that yoga one realizes Brahman. Yajnavalkya Smriti 1.8. Right, so these are, you know, the benefits that you get here. So these are all purusharthas, right? Because we can say within Dharma, then you get this. You have good conduct, compassion, nonviolence, charity, study of the Vedas, all these things, knowledge, all these things will come. And you'll get that other purushartha, which is moksha. So all that will come. So you'll be liberated with all these nice qualities and everything. Vyasadeva inquired from Narad Muni, please tell me what is extremely lacking, right? Because he's doing all this. In other words, he did this, like that's what he said. He's done all the things for Brahman. He's studying the Shastras. That means then he's doing all the activities, you know, in a regulated way. So his point is, what's wrong? What's missing? Why am I not satisfied? 158. Without describing the Lord and consequently without worshiping, the Lord is not pleased with dry Brahmagyan. I think this jnana, darshanam, is insufficient. That is made clear in the next verse. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The eternal relation of an individual soul with the Supreme Soul, personality of Godhead, is constitutionally one of being the eternal servitor of the eternal master. The Lord has expanded himself as living beings in order to accept loving service from them. And this alone can satisfy both the Lord and the living beings. Such a scholar as Vyasadeva has completed many expansions of the Vedic literatures, ending with the Vedanta philosophy, but none of them have written directly glorifying the personality of Godhead. Right, so even the Vedanta Sutra, he establishes worship of the Lord, devotional service, the devotees and the superiority over just the Brahman and all that. But he hasn't actually described the glories of the Lord, because we're talking about, you can say, no, nobody's mentioned that, but that's all still just part of Sambandhagyan. Point is having that Sambandhagyan, then there must be Abhideya, there must be Prayojana, right? So he hasn't shown all the things, that the application of that. You know, he himself is not applying that in this here. So that's why we can see is that those who are more elevated, still, you know, within the material context, they can appreciate the supremacy of the Lord and, you know, the superiority of you know, things connected with him. But it's not necessarily that they take up devotional service. Like I remember visiting this one scholar, and he had this quite big room, you know, the living room. It's quite a big room. And on all four walls, except for where the doors or windows were, it was bookshelves, you know, bookshelves, floor on up. And all the shelves were full. I mean, packed. And so I was asking about the books and all that. And he says that, he in 1 year, he reads all these books. So then he goes through, and depending upon what season it is, you know, like now, we heard this morning all the firecrackers and everything like that. So it must be something connected with, you know, some variety of Durga or Kali Puja, right? You know, otherwise Navadvipa would not bother getting up, right? So like that. So when it's Kali season, he reads all the books connected with Kali. When it's Durga, all about Durga and Shiva, about that. Vishnu, you know, Janmasthami, then he'll be reading about Krishna. You know, so like that, he just, you know, then, so he, you know, just that Panchopasana, just whatever is happening at the time, that's what he's reading about. Right. So then in that way he's very knowledgeable and all that. But at the same time, as he has the knowledge and he can talk about how the Supreme, but ultimately they'll think the impersonal Brahman is the ultimate aspect. Like that. So that's the difficulty. So, but none of them have been written directly glorifying the personality of Godhead. They've mentioned him, you know, so his position is glorious, but it's not directly glorified. Dry philosophical speculations, even on the transcendental subject of the absolute, have very little attraction without directly dealing with the glorification of the Lord. You remember for, you know, quite some time, then when we were dealing with Vedanta Sutra, we were just dealing with the sutras themselves and the commentaries themselves. And, you know, it was found to be, you know, a bit on the dry side, you know. So then when we expanded it, where on those verses, because those verses, Bhagavatam's a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So there's Bhagavatam verses that are naturally commented. When we started bringing in those, even though the volume was greater, you know, of the material, it actually was more pleasant and it was easier to understand, right? So that's Narad Muni's point, is when you're directly dealing with the Lord, then these things go very nicely. But if you're not directly dealing with the Lord, then these things become very slow. You know, it just doesn't give the results. It doesn't give the satisfaction.
I have a... little side question. In the course, yeah, we have three courses. Can we say that the first one is mainly about Sambandha, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Abhidhya, and Chaitanya Charitamrita Prayojana?
I mean, in one sense, you could kind of look at it like that. It's not a problem. But, you know, all of them will be dealing with all three, but their emphasis, you could say, is in that way, yes.
Yes,
you know, just like a Gita will be focused on Sambandha, then Bhagavatam will be focused. I mean, the first part will also have that element of Sambandha, but in the context, you know, then you're going to have the later is going to be, you know, Abhideya, how all those devotees then serve the Lords, and then you're going to have Prayojana and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mm-hmm. The same time as we've heard all this knowledge from Gita and Bhagavatam. And then we see how the devotees of Lord Chaitanya and the Lord himself then apply that, you know, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So each one of them will have all things. It's just a matter of which is prominent.
Yes.
You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, let's say you have a lemon drink. So it'll have some lemon in it, you know, some sour flavor. It'll have some sweet flavor. It'll have water, right? You might even put a pinch of salt or, you know, something like this and that. So that'll be, you call it by one thing. But let's say now we have a chutney. So it has sour in it. It has some water in it. It has sugar in it. It has, some salt in it. But it's called a chutney, not a drink. Because the proportions are different.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So everything's there. Whatever you're dealing with in all these 12 years, is everything's there. It's just where the focus is to bring out that aspect. So until the Sambandha Gyan is very clear, then how do you start to practice it?
Yes.
Right? So you hear nicely, then that aspect of Manana and Nididhyasana. Mm-hmm. So you're going to hear, then practice. You know, so that's why Pranipata Pari Prashna Sevaya, then you apply it. Does that make sense? Yes, okay. But so, yes, you can say, but don't stick to it that's the only way to look at it.
Yes,
but at the same time, as you could say prominently, that's what's there. Mm. You know, but that's what's unique about the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then these books that Srila Prabhupada's giving, is that they have all three aspects there in their perfection. You know, it's just that, it's just like he gave the first, you know, the Eastern Ocean of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as nectar in nectar devotion to study with the Bhagavad Gita, because that much then we're getting actually the Sambandha Gyan of the bhakti, and then how to practice that, you know, the practical, you know, how to chant, how to, you know, see everything connected to Krishna. But he didn't give that last part of nectar devotion, because the time when we dealt with it a little bit, you know, through Jivadharma, then, you know, it doesn't make very much sense, right? But now after then so many years and going through the Bhagavatam and then with Chaitanya Charitamrita, now going through that latter part of nectar devotion, now it has more of an understanding, right? But even more advanced is tasting that, you know, because we can discuss it, we can talk about it, but it's the taste that's the higher. You know, it's like one devotee once asked Prabhupada about going and living in Radhakund, and Prabhupada said, what will you do there? He said, I'll preach. And Prabhupada said, no, Radhakund's for tasting. You know, so, you know, in other words, go somewhere else to preach.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so this dry speculation has very little attraction without directly dealing with the glorification of the Lord. The personality of Godhead is the last word in transcendental realization. The absolute realized as impersonal Brahman or localized supersoul, Paramatma, is less productive of transcendental bliss than the supreme personal realization of his glories. The compiler of the Vedanta Darshan is Vyasadeva himself. Yet he is troubled, although he is the author. So what sort of transcendental bliss can be derived by the readers and listeners of Vedanta, which is not explained directly by Vyasadeva, the author? Herein arises the necessity of explaining Vedanta Sutra in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam by the self same author. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.8 purport. So now from 1.5.12, the commentary says, Brahman, being one form only, is without karma. It is thus called Naishkarmyam. Anjana means covering, and consequently upadis. Something which destroys upadis is called Niranjanam. Jnana, which destroys upadis, and is none other than Brahman, is if devoid of bhakti, bhava, to achyuta is not glorious, shobhate, at all, alam. It is not suitable as a complete realization. What to speak of karma, full of desire, which is suffering itself, abhadram, in sadhana and sadhya, shasvat. And karma without desire, indicated by the word cha, if not offered to the Lord, it does not purify existence, since it is purely materialistic. Right? You can purify yourself within the material context and rise from the lower planets up to the higher planets, but then naturally one will go back down to the lower planets and just like this. So you can't actually purify yourself. You can't purify existence. If we're talking about the existence of the soul, then no matter what you're doing, this good conduct, compassion, nonviolence, charity, study the Vedas, that won't purify the soul. It'll purify the consciousness and you'll move up and down within in the four first levels of consciousness, but they won't get you to the fifth. That only happens by devotional service and the association of devotees. Now, when you perform these same activities connected to the Lord, now you'll get the effect of purification on the platform of the soul. Then the spiritual purification will be there. You can say that's actual purification because that gets you out of the material world, but everything else just moves you around in the world. That's all. It doesn't get you anything better. Niranjanam can also mean without upadis. Since this verse is highly respected, Sutta places it again at the end of the 12th canto. That's interesting. Bhakti is the cause of seeing the complete Lord. That is summarized in two verses, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5-37-38. One worships the form described in the mantra, mantra murtim, or one worships the person whose form is also the mantra. Who is devoid of a form except that mentioned in the mantra, amurtikam, or devoid of material form. Or amurtikam can mean he whose form has no difference from his sarup, unlike material forms. That worshiper sees the form of the Lord since the Lord personally shows him. So it's either the mantra is this, whose form is the mantra, or the form described by the mantra. Right, but because he has no, there's no difference from his sarup, there's no inside and outside, and there is no material form. Okay, what are we up to now? Okay, so time is up for now. So we'll end here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.